are we now? End of day three. Here we are again. So we've had three full days. This is basically halfway through, isn't it? This is the halfway point, somewhere around now. So, how's it been? We're right in the middle, in the dark forest of this expedition, right in the depths of it. We had some groups today, and we've had some interviews, and Caroline introduced the loving kindness practice. And there's emotions around. There's fear, joy, some worry, frustration, anger, hatred. I even heard some laughter in the washing up. Each of us in this space, simultaneously, we are on our own journey, aren't we? And at the same time, we're on a shared expedition here. Each of us unique, with our own stuff, our own characteristics, our own way of seeing things. Our own way of working through things, our own way of getting things wrong, our own way of getting stuck, our own way of getting unstuck. And simultaneously, it's also true that we have this amazing common ground here. That we're somewhat sensitive, aren't we? We're creatures of sense. We can't actually stop sensations happening. Or maybe we can in some profound deep meditation, I don't know. But we are all impacted by life, and it brings up stuff in each of us. In that very simple way, we're kind of identical, aren't we? We're one. It's like we're one. And we're unique, both at the same time. How'd you get your head around that? I'm here, I see the world from here. I can see lots of faces. You guys can see lots of back of heads. It's different. I'm not you. And yet, here we are together at the same time. And we may feel like we don't know what to do all the time. That we may see somebody else upset. Somebody looking down or angry or frustrated or depressed, and we don't know how to be supportive, what to do. It hurts us, like, oh, I feel for that person. I wish they didn't have to have that pain right now. That looks difficult to bear. What can I do? But don't overlook the simple fact that you being here with your integrity, your interest, your willingness to keep showing up again and again and again, even when it's hard, is deeply supportive. Imagine if it was just you here this week, nobody else. How would that be? Would you feel so supported? Probably be triggered a bit less by various things. You'd have more space. You could get away with not coming to the hall. You could sleep in, no one would know. But isn't there something really kind of tender about the fact that we unavoidably contact our emotional life, our worry, our grief, our tears, our joy, our inspiration, our really important questions about life and death. And we're visible to other people. Other people kind of are aware of us as we're going through this. And that's something which I think is very healing. In the teachings on equanimity, Caroline was teaching on metta today, the loving kindness. This comes as part of a whole group of teachings on love in the Buddhist tradition. We have loving kindness, compassion, what's called empathetic joy, and equanimity. And these four qualities support the flourishing and the opening of the heart of a person. They all work together to keep love in balance, to keep love energized, to keep it warm, to keep it responsive. It's like this innate intelligence of love or the human heart or just life somehow. And one of the teachings of equanimity, one of the characteristics of equanimity, is that we can't take other people's suffering from them. We can't just say, I'll take your grief, I'll have that. I mean, maybe you can, maybe there's some magical way that you can do that, right? But the general principle is that each of us has our own stuff that we need to deal with. We've got our own karma, I guess, our own reactivity, our own stickiness, our own problem areas. And the way it gets healed is by making it conscious. So I'm sitting here and I'm conscious of my inner life welling up moment after moment in response to you guys, my environment. You can't do that for me. I have to do that. And you being here with your honesty and your sincerity supports me to do that myself. Isn't it mysterious? Isn't it mysterious how it is? You're you, I'm me, and we are, at the same time, inextricably linked. We're one as well, we're part of a greater whole, and we're also individuals. It's mysterious, the mystery of self and other. Why is there self and other in the universe? Isn't that mysterious? The universe appears. Nobody really knows where from. There's lots of ideas. I don't believe any of them. And it shows up in a way where it makes you and then me. And we're not the same and we are the same. I think that's wonderfully mysterious. And unexplained. Maybe unexplainable. Do you remember one, I can't remember which night it was, I think it might have been the opening talk, or maybe, I can't remember. I was talking about awakening breaking in to our life. You know, sometimes it's like we come here, we learn meditation, we learn the theory, we do what we need to do, and we get awakened. That's one way of looking at it, sure. But the way I prefer to think about it, the way that it makes more sense to me. How's the volume at the back, by the way? Is that okay? Could it be louder? Could be louder. Okay. It's fine. Okay. It's good. Good. Okay. Good. Awakening breaking in. I remember when I was younger, and it was a time when I was supposed to be deciding what exams I was going to do. And I had to really think, well, what's really important to me? And actually I made lots of wrong choices and I did some things which were completely boring. But something happened around that time which I still remember. And it's been kind of a part of my life since then. This is like early teenage years. I just was stopped one moment in my tracks and I was like, wait a minute, what am I actually? I'm supposed to know what I'm supposed to do, I'm supposed to know what's important, what I value, but before I can do any of that, I don't actually know what I am, first of all. No one's told me that. They've told me about maths and science and history and art and English and politics or whatever, cheese, cooking, shoes. But in the middle of all this, there's this being, and I don't know what it is. And I thought, well, I'm really interested in that. Wonder what exams I need to take to do that. And there weren't any, unfortunately. But that wasn't something that I remember making happen. So I don't know if anybody else can relate to this. I'm sure you can. It's like sometimes we just realise, wait a minute, we don't know what life is. What is life? And it breaks into our daydreams. And we're like, whoa, there's life, there's conscious life. And it's mysterious. It's hard to explain. We can think about it, but we never get satisfied that we can really think it through in a way where the thinking mind knows, all right, that's what it is, done that, can put it down. Ah, life, the universe, everything solved. I mean, I've never had that experience. Maybe somebody else has. There's, in the Zen tradition, I think it might even be, no, it's not in the Korean, in the early Zen tradition, which maybe it was in China or India, there's a historical record of a dialogue between a Zen master and either a student or a king, I'm not sure, maybe one of you knows. Whoever it was, somebody asked the Zen master, so what's the Buddha? You know, he was wanting to know what the Buddha mind was, what the Buddha was, what awakening is. He said, well, what's the Buddha? The Zen master, as a response to that, said, what is this thing? And how did it get here? What? I bet the guy was like, what's he on about? That doesn't make any sense. Maybe not. But what is this thing and how did it get here, actually? This thing, a sound, a feeling, a thought, a bowl of food, any individual piece of the universe is here because the universe is here. What is this thing and how did it get here? So for some reason, the human is able to experience this mystery. For some reason, one of the things that happens in life is the mind is stunned into silence by the awesome and simple fact that we don't know. Don't know mind. We don't know what happens when we die. I don't know what happens when I die. Fundamentally, I don't know what I am in a fixed way. And for me, personally, there's been something quite seductive about that experience. Because it seems really significant. And I'm still understanding why it's significant. Still trying to make sense of how it fits into practice. Why it's significant. And still, it's one of the most important things for me. It's almost the central touchstone of coming to retreats, reading Dharma books, reading psychology books, therapy, trying to work with things that are painful, trying to understand questions that understand consciousness. Right in the middle of it is I can always come back to this thing and all of my doubts just go, oh, I don't know. There's one thing that I don't doubt, actually. See if this is true for you. I don't doubt that I do not know what this is. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind. I'm experiencing something like don't know mind. I can't grasp it. So if you're doubting about what to do, how you should be, whether you should do this technique or that technique, whether there's any use in practice, whether these guys at the front know what they're talking about, whether I could do this or not. All these things the doubt goes into, all the ways we find ourselves doubting. The mind just doesn't know this, it doesn't know that, it's trying to figure this out, it's trying to figure that out. You know, the doubting mind that's figuring out that kind of doubt. When it meets the night sky, it shuts up. It's like, stars, oh yeah, what? And there you are, there's presence, isn't there? You're there. The sort of the maybe you could call it the ego, the selfing, the irresolute vacillation that we were talking about in the hindrance talk. It just drops out of the sky. There's no ground for it. There's something peaceful about that. There's something very open about that. At that point, we're willing to entertain any possibility of how things are. I might not be a stupid idiot. Fancy that. I might not be lost, confused, and my life being in a mess. That might actually just be a thought. It might be a self-image that I get stuck in, that I can't get it together with work, relationships, money, practice. We're like, oh, I don't actually know that that's true. Okay, great. Maybe there's a chance for me yet. So coming back to this old Zen master, the folk in South Korea thought, this guy's onto something. And they do a koan practice, which means they reflect on that exchange between that master and that disciple. They reflect on it. They use their thinking mind and they reflect on the story. Okay, this Zen master, the assumption is he's enlightened. He knows something that the student wants to know. And he said to him, the Buddha is, what is this thing and how did it get here? Okay, I want to know the significance of that. So their style of practice is to spend hours and hours, months and months, asking the question, what is this? What is this? And listening. What actually is this? Don't know. It's like a big secret. So one thing this kind of reflection helps us with, I think, it can highlight our assumptions. Can you remember, before you arrived here this week, can anybody remember what you thought it was going to be like? Here. You know, the day before, or travelling here, I've booked a Nirodha retreat. Okay, it's going to be like this. All these images of how it's going to be. We're right in the middle of it now. Right in the centre of this week. Embedded deeply. This mysterious adventure. Has it been how you imagined? How do you think the next 3 days are going to be? Think now. 3 days. Yeah, got 3 days. The images that come up, aren't there? How my practice could be, should be, how I want it to be, how I hope it isn't. Where's all that happening? We just live in this imaginary world. Isn't the truth of the matter that we don't know how it's going to be? We might be right. But there's a big difference between an image of how we think it's going to be and here and now. And when it's tomorrow night, it'll still be here and now. Somebody came to me in a one-to-one, I think it was today, and asked about God. It was very beautiful. Does God speak to people? And he doesn't speak to me in any way that, in any conventional way. But when I look at the night sky, or whatever reason, I just feel the immensity of the mystery that there is life. Something about that which is almost like God. I would like to say God. If I was feeling a bit poetic, I would say that's God. I don't know if it makes sense to you, but it's like just like this wonder and feeling connected. something about feeling connected. Because most of the time I live in this assumption that I'm separate. I'm a separate being. But when that shuts up, and the don't know mind bursts in, like, oh, I don't know that I'm separate actually here. Ideas of being separate, they can't survive in that don't know mind really. They just go, pah. And then there's like mystery. And it feels like this connection. And in the RAIN, what's the word? Is it an acronym? That's an acronym, yeah. In the RAIN acronym, recognize, accept, investigate, non-identification. This don't know mind part, I think, fits in with the non-identification part of the N. Somehow, particularly in that part. Because when we feel depressed, let's say, can't it sometimes feel that we are always depressed? We are depressed. We are angry. When we're angry, we are angry. That's me. And I'm maybe useless. Or I'm angry, it's not good enough. I shouldn't be angry. But if there's room for this don't know mind, then we can. Okay. Do you want some water? Mm-hmm. Yeah?
No. Water.
Okay. Maybe you should give me a glass.
No, that's fine.
Are you sure? That's it, we don't know, do we? I mean, it feels like this jacket's mine. But there's room for doubt. It feels like this anger is mine. But there is room for doubt. A good kind of doubt. The kind of doubt that says, okay, you don't actually know that 100%. Seems like it's your anger. Where did you come from? Where did the anger come from? It's mysterious. Don't cling to it so tightly. It's more mysterious than that. All our ideas about realization, enlightenment, awakening, satori, kensho, stream entry, all these magical, tempting ideas that there are. Who knows? Who knows what it's going to be like? Are we carrying ideas of how it should be, awakening? In another interview, somebody came with all these wonderful questions about awakening, and we ended up talking about how the fact that we are here asking the question, or here wanting to know, we're here with our interest, We honour our interest and we come here and we sit to honour our interest, curiosity, our intuition that there's a deeper, bigger, vaster way of seeing things. That is the awakening that we want to be interested in. That's the real stuff that's here, this second. Other than our ideas about how it's going to be. If we want, we can just give them up, I think. I think we can just give them up. You can use them as well, but we can also drive ourselves mad with those things and compare ourselves and judge ourselves and go around feeling like we don't meet the grade, we'll never meet the grade. And then we push ourselves and our practice becomes forced and in a way which doesn't help, it just tires us out. So if you find that you're in meditation practice or some part of your life that you know, you sense that you're pushing yourself for something. I'm not saying pushing is bad, but just be curious, check out what ideal images around about how you should be. And be prepared to admit the fact that maybe you don't know how you should be. Because maybe you don't know where you came from in the first place. Another angle on this is when we are watching our thoughts, watching our ideas. It's a wonderful practice to, in a very informal way, with your eyes open, just watch thoughts pass through the mind. You know, like the metaphor clouds in the sky. And when you're feeling relaxed or you've given up on the breath, or you're just in an armchair, just okay. Oh yeah, there's thoughts happening. Now watch them. Where do they come from? Where do they go? I find that very mysterious. They just keep happening and no one else can see them, but they're definitely happening. Where do they come from? Where do they go? I'm thinking about cats. Where did that thought come from? What are you thinking about right now? What are you thinking about right now? Where did the first one go? It's mysterious, isn't it? And the don't know mind, I'm making don't know mind into something here. So forgive me for doing that. Don't know mind becomes another thought. But it shows us that our thoughts are only true in a certain way, I think. They're relatively true. They are useful to make sense of things in a certain level, in a certain bandwidth of our consciousness, so we can talk to each other. Thoughts are amazing, aren't they? Colourful display of consciousness, form, colour, movement, perception, guessing, planning, thinking, communicating. And yet they don't last, and we change our mind a lot. 1 minute we like something, and the next season we don't like it. We think one, this is the real teaching. 2 years later we think this is the real teaching. 3 years later it's this, and then it's this. So can we hold them more lightly? Can we hold our opinions, our views, more lightly? We still have views, we still have opinions. But at the same time, we know we might be wrong, and that somehow there's this thing in the middle of life which means that, which is mystery. At any point, all our assumptions might just go, oh, actually, I don't know. Okay. So there's the fact that there are thoughts, and we can use them, and they make sense, our opinions, our views. And there's the fact that they can dissolve and go who knows where. Two different things at the same time. What about another person? Here we all are. We started the talk by talking about how each of us is unique, and yet we are in the same boat here. We're fundamentally linked in this way. The human being wants to flourish, wants to survive, wants to be happy. And we're sensitive to dukkha, to things troubling us. All of us. And each of you unique people, I don't think I could ever fully know you in some ways. I could never know your uniqueness. You can never know my uniqueness. We always can surprise one another with new things about ourselves, because we're always changing. Learning, shifting, growing, being born, dying. You can't pin somebody down, can you? You fall in love with somebody, you get together with them, and they change, and you're like, oh, I don't feel like that anymore. We get surprised by the ungraspability of other people. Other people aren't fixed because they're empty. That's the wisdom part. Knowing that other people aren't fixed. They're empty of being fixed. They're empty of being always the same way. It's the wisdom. The compassion is the part which is also simultaneously true. I know you suffer, and I feel it with you, I'm here with you. Because it's like I sit with my dukkha, my pain, and you sit with yours. And because I sit with mine, I know what it's like. You know, we're in the same boat, so that's the compassion piece. And they're both true at the same time. Something else which comes to mind which is related is, can we relax out of our assumptions about what it means to practice, what it means to be here, what's important in life? Can we get loose from our assumptions about how I am, how I should be, how you are, how it'll be these next 3 days here? See what that does, because I'm feeling like, oh yeah, this feels good. It gives me a sense of being open to receiving what is coming, rather than telling the universe what's coming. Do you know what I mean? Rather than me saying, it's going to be like this tomorrow. It's going to be 6:15, that's early, don't like that. But actually, I don't know that. I if I can put down my assumptions, I'm open and willing to, I'm more receptive, I'm able to receive the next object in meditation, I'm willing to receive the next object in the day, the next situation that life just goes, here you go, Paul, here's a situation for you. Okay, this situation, and then this situation. If I don't have my assumptions, I'm open to receiving it and I can respond, I'm freer to respond. One way to help us with that is to reflect, where do our assumptions come from anyway? You know, the language that we use to make sense of things, where do we get that from? We got it from other people, didn't we? We got it from society, from our family, from school, from TV. It's like this most private thing that was in the middle of our heads that we use to make sense of the most intimate and profound and difficult and mundane things in our life. We just inherited it. So maybe we inherited our assumptions as well. So maybe we don't need to believe so clingily, so strongly that they are I, me and mine. I have a prejudice, I have a preference, I have an opinion. If we stop and reflect, it's like, maybe it's actually not me at all, actually. I got it from somewhere else, maybe. And if it came from somewhere else, I can let it go to somewhere else. Our beliefs about Dharma practice. One thing when you sort of get into the spiritual world, as you guys all know, there's a lot of different opinions about what's the best path, maybe. The best practice? What's the best group? What's the best or the worst? Or, you know, we just have a lot of ideas about stuff, and if we're not conscious, we believe them. And we go about our life believing these things, and if we stop and look, oh, actually, maybe that's not true. Let me be open and see. Let me go and join the Scientologists and see what I learn. You go. Okay, so just to finish, I'm not sure where this actually comes from, but I think it's the Zen tradition. Maybe one of you knows. The don't know mind is the source of all virtues. The don't know mind is the source of all virtues. Maybe it's a virtue without an S, I'm not sure. Isn't that interesting? Why would they say that? Virtue, right, that's good. Goodness. Maybe goodness, true goodness. The don't know mind is the source of all true goodness. Maybe it's worth exploring what that might be. Do I have any experience of that? When I look at the night sky or when I look in the mirror? What's it like to really ask the question, what is this life? The end of the talk. Hands up, who knows what's going to happen next? No hands, good.